Pod.
Rugby pod.
Hello and welcome back to a brand new sixth season of the Rugby Pod on Spotify. I'm Andy Rowan. Big Jim and Goody are with me as usual. We'll be catching up on some of the rugby news from over the past few weeks, looking ahead to the start of the new Premiership season this weekend and getting the guys' predictions as well. Then we'll be having a chat with Russing, Scotland and British and Irish Lions star Finn Russell. So settle back, enjoy, and make sure you've subscribed on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else. This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
How's the off-season been, guys?
Interesting. How was yours, Jim? You look happy. You're smiling. You know, you had your ups and downs last year, didn't you, son?
You know, some We all had our ups and downs. We didn't get four holidays like you could self and then two more in the off-season as well. But thank you for asking and visually looking at me thinking, you look unbelievable, Jim. You look tanned. You look big. You look shredded, you look hung. All them things, all them positive things that you put into the mountain pot. It's Andy Rowe Stag too in a few days, lads. That's why I'm so happy. Not because I'm necessarily back on the rugby pod for a sixth season. Can you believe it's been 6 years? How are we still here? How are we here talking about Bush and talking about the stuff that we talk about? And we're here for a sixth year. I don't look a day past 50, lads.
Well, mate, we've aged a little bit and my weight has probably gone up a stone for every year we've done it. But it is great to be back for a sixth season and it's amazing. Wherever we go, wherever I'm going now, I was on holiday in Portugal, people loving the podcast. And Jim, here's one for you. Off season, holiday, of course I did. Walk into the hotel and this isn't a promotion. I didn't get anything free. I paid to stay at this hotel, but the Conrad in Quinta del Lago is an unbelievable hotel. Had an amazing holiday there. First person I see as I walk into the reception, Jim, as I'm on holiday, Johnny Sexton.
Again?
You said that before.
I promise you.
That's last season's story, mate.
No. I promise you. So it's kind of weird. So last time I saw him there was 2019, just pre-World Cup when they were out there on camp. The first person I see, I'm walking in, I'm shouting at the kids. I'm like, just stop running. You're going to get hit by a car in a minute. Whatever you're saying to them. And then the first person I see is Johnny Sexton. And then you go into Cool Dad. You're like, kids, just relax. Mum, you take over. And I was just having a chat with Johnny Sexton in reception. The first thing he said to me is, why is Jim Hamilton such a cunt?
No, he didn't. He said that again.
No, he was joking. But he was on good form. And yeah, it was just
Andrew,
interesting.
So we've aged 6 years, but probably, look, I'll probably age 10 years in 6 years because of the pandemic. Now, Johnny, without being horrible to him, aged significantly over about a couple of years. He went from black hair to black and white hair to white hair. Then now he's got black hair because he's dyed it. How was he looking?
He was looking good, actually. And I sat there by the pool. And if you remember, Jim, if you can cast your mind back, I sat there by the pool and sent you a picture of the difference between an international superstar having a burger by the pool and then a Irish rugby player having a bowl of fruit.
You sent me a picture of your feet. Have you got gout or not? Or is that swelling?
What's... It's just the cankle, mate. It's the cankle from the operation.
Oh, the cankle. That's the one. But nothing's changed.
Well, Gertie, you mentioned people recognising you from the pod overseas. Well, I climbed Ben Nevis in Scotland. No one recognised me. But Jim, absolute superstar. Climbing Ben.
No, it was ridiculous.
Every 5 minutes.
No, it wasn't. All right, it was. Yeah, it was. It wasn't every 5 minutes. It was every... probably six or seven, humbly. You know, it wasn't that bad, but it was pretty bad.
Well, so let's just clear it up then. Jim, you finally gone through with the challenge and stuck to your word because Last season, season five, you were pulling out of physical challenges left, right and centre with Andy Rowe. You pulled out the Eaton Mess. You pulled out of Ben Nevis. You pulled out of loads of things. You finally climbed Ben Nevis together.
We did. We did. I climbed it, walked it, ran it. Andy Rowe crawled a bit. It was the hottest day. It was the hottest day in Scotland ever, on record, I think. And Andy Rowe, be honest, were you thinking, how has this man got up here so quick?
I did. I didn't think that you had it in you, to be honest. I saw you when you did your triathlon and you almost died running 5K. I didn't think you're going to make it.
Very
up
true.
Mountain.
Well, I'm not really built for a triathlon, but I am the mountain man. So I did get up there and it was, yes, me and Andy Rowe got up there. He got the bagpipes out, which was hilarious because we played them in Glencoe or somewhere that looked fucking good on Instagram. That's all I know. And I think I broke the bagpipes and Andy Rowe played them at the top. It was and Andrew, you were missed, is what I'm trying to say. Mm. Now, I don't want to stereotype and go off the picture that you sent me from holiday with the gout or the canker or whatever it was. I think you would have been like a lot of the families trying to get up there. I don't think you would have got up there, Andrew. I'll be honest. No. I mean, it was quite funny. We were talking about you lots on the way up and we were walking past people. I thought they were smoking inhalers, but they weren't. They were smoking vapes. I don't know if you smoke an inhaler for asthma, but these people, there was like these... these clouds of smoke, and they're like, how far is it to get up? And I was like, look, I don't want to be horrible, but I don't think you're getting up there. And if you do get up there, you're probably not getting back. Every time I smelt the watermelon or the strawberry vape, I thought of you, Andrew. I thought
how nice
you.
Is it, though? That smells lovely, isn't it?
Well, I think it's lovely if you're at the bottom of the hill, but if you're halfway up the biggest mountain in the UK, then no, arguably not. But you were missed.
Yeah, thanks, guys. And would I have been better than Andy Rowe? Because you basically phoned me and said he was an embarrassment.
He had all the gear. He had these horrendous walking boots on. These big, massive leather things. Like, I've cooked him his dinner before he's gone up. You know, I've made his bed. I've made his coffee before we've gone up. I've brought the whiskey. He's thinking, what is going on here? And he is sweating. Kind of like we will be at the weekend, Andrew, not me. But
I hope so.
It was good fun, though. We connected. And, look, as I say, I'm back.
And, Jim, you were in Gloucester last weekend, weren't you? Well, a couple of weekends ago.
I was. Andrew, while you were on holiday, I've been doing all these good things at Ben Nevis. I don't know why that was a good thing. It was a good thing for... It was a great thing for Instagram. Look, let's just put it out there. It looked bloody great on Instagram. It did, didn't it?
It did. And you got away from the kids for a couple of days, right?
Very true. My wife has reminded me of that with the up-and-coming trip to Spain, to Ibiza. But yeah, me and Andy Rowe again. Look, we're BFFs, Andrew. Maybe it's just be me and him. But we did... the game for Jack Adams Memorial at the weekend, last weekend actually. A lovely day at King's Home, Gloucester versus Bristol's. It was good. What about my speech before the game, Andy Rowe, for the Gloucester lads? The arousing speech.
It was
speech.
Very arousing.
I know, I saw them look at him on the video and they're like, who the fuck is this clown talking to us? There's some absolute Gloucester legends in that changing room. And then
that was my first point. I did say that. That was my first line.
They cut that bit out.
No, well, I did say, look, lads, there's some Gloucester legends in this room and who better to speak to you fellas than the Gloucester legend that's been sent in. It's fucking Bristol in there, lads. It's Bristol. Let's go get it. Anyway, they were fired up for the game, but it was a great occasion.
They were laughing at the end of it.
They were laughing. Yeah, same thing.
They were. And Jim, why weren't you playing? Because obviously there was people in worse nick than me playing. I obviously couldn't turn up for the game because I was away. But what's your excuse for not playing?
The body, man. The body. No, my back's still buggered. So.
Oh, no, not the back again, is it?
Yeah, I know. I'm not going to bring that up again this season.
Well, the Premiership gets underway this weekend, hence why we're back. So should we have a look ahead to that now? And should we talk about the rules for a start? Because there's a few rule changes, isn't there? What do you guys make of those?
They're called laws. Andy Rowe, just to let you know, they're called laws.
I
mean, you said
can
rules.
Can you not call them rules?
Same thing.
Because what if you want to say rules is rules?
Well, you can say rules is rules, but they're laws. I mean, if we're being real rugby nausea about it, and going straight into the law changes is really rugby nausea, at least call it laws, Andy Rowe. But there are a few changes, yes, and I agree with one of them, and I don't like another one. The main two that are going in. Obviously, we're going to talk about the 50-22 kick, where if you kick it from inside your own half and it bounces out in the 22 of the opposition's half, you get the line out. Now, I like that play, and I like that idea, because basically what that's trying to do is take defensive numbers out of the front lines. They've got to cover the backfield as well, which should entice teams to attack more from in and around their own halfway, the 10 meter line of their own half, etc., etc., instead of just going to this box kick game. But I like that rule. I do like it a lot. The other rule I don't like so much because it just ends players like Jim Hamilton's career on the old pick and goos, doesn't it, Jim?
Yeah, the pick and goo one, where if you get held up over the try line, it will be a dropout from beneath your post and to kick out. And
doesn't have to be beneath the posts.
Does it not have to be beneath the posts?
No, just maybe try line. Some on the try line, yeah.
Okay, well, that could be interesting then. I don't know why is it going to be any more interesting because you just hoof it long. But yeah, I think that takes away all the pick and goo stuff that we've seen. I think if we think back to last season, how good the rugby was, and obviously I don't know how, but they did. Quinns won the Prem. But the kind of rugby that they played, Bristol, I mean, most of the rugby at the back end of the season was class. But there's an element of the winter months, the old pick and goo game. Rugby doesn't become as easy to watch during the winter months. And that style of game, the pick and go, Exeter are the very, very best team at it. They have been latching on. Chad Christoph Ridley at the game, Gloucester versus Bristol last weekend. I was asking him about the laws, or the rules is rules, around obviously the pick and goo. And he just said they're going to be hot on it to start with. The latchers latching onto the players. Chat to Kelly Brown about it as well. So I think there'll be a big shift in that because it almost became impossible to stop. That if you think about Exeter when they got close to the try line, you knew that they were scoring. You knew Luke Kawasiki was going over with three guys holding on to him. So I think they're trying to not outlaw it, but they're trying to move away from that. So it will be interesting. I like the 50-22 rule. I saw a few clips from Australia, actually Rob Carney, an Irishman, doing his thing. I quite like that. But yeah, I think everyone wants to try and see a quicker game. And yeah, I don't know. They'll be hot on the pick and goo, won't they, around the try line early on, I reckon.
I think they're doing it, obviously, to increase the ball in play time. And my issue with the law that states if you get held up over the try line, you go to a goal line dropout for the defensive team. If you've got Fran Steyn, or if you've got someone that can hoof it 60, 70 metres, you'll just hold them up over the line. Then you coach your players to work your body angles so that when they are close to the line, you just get underneath them. And we know that's possible. You just got someone to well it down the field 60, 70 metres, and it's a defensive game again, isn't it? And I agree with the changing the latching rule so that there's not two or three guys pre-bound and, you know, going through the contact, and there's dangers around that, and the one guy can latch now, but he's got to enter the ruck in the same way that everyone else does. So he's got to go through the gate and stay on his feet. You know, you see a lot of latchers, they just go down to the deck together and it's kind of sealing off. So they're going to be hot on that. The big thing for me is just it's going to take some getting used to, isn't it? For teams, for fans, for everything. It's gone a little bit down the rugby league route of let's just hoof it, have a goal line dropout. Six to go in terms of the rugby league. But, you know, Faz will be on fire with it, won't he?
And the big thing, chatting to Christoph as well, which people listen to this might be happy to hear, is around the breakdown and attacking a fellow player's legs. Not that players would attack a fellow player's leg, but you'd go for the hinges and stuff. And again, chat to Kelly in depth about it because he's obviously coaching at Saracens now. They're not outlawing the turtle roll. And we saw obviously Jack Willis get badly injured with his ACL in that mechanism. But they're trying to look after players more so who are in them jackaling positions. So hopefully that rule or law interpretation is enforced as well, because some of the injuries around the breakdown, which again, going back to last season, was something that we spoke about a lot as well.
And there's been a change at Bath as well. Sips is back. Do you reckon he could be the man to get them into the top four?
Well, Andrew, if there's any time he's going to do it, it's the year one. And I say that because every time he goes to a club, his first year is unbelievable. So Bath are an interesting club. I'm sure we can talk about what some of the other clubs in terms of what players they've brought in. But I don't know, is Cipriani alone enough for Bath? It's interesting looking at his journey. I'm glad to see him back in the Prem. Love watching him play. Yeah. The way he left Gloucester, was unsure what he was going to do. And he's ended up at Bath, of all places. So again, Bath are an interesting club. To see where they go. I'm not too sure that Cipriano will be enough for them, but they're in Europe as well this year.
I think the big thing for Sips is it's great to see him back playing rugby in the Premiership again, isn't it? Because he is a kind of bums on seats player. You know, the fans will be excited to see him play, the Bath fans especially. And in reality, is he good enough, and are Bath as a squad good enough to get in the top four? I think Sips is out and out quality on his day. I don't think the Bath squad is good enough to get in the top four. Even with Danny Cipriani, I think Reece Priestland was phenomenal for him last year at times. And where did they finish? Seventh or eighth? They squeaked into Europe, I know that. But yeah, I mean, top four, I think there's three big clubs, isn't there? If we're being really honest. There's three big clubs, I think, that will be in the top four. And there's a load of others that will be scrapping for that fourth place. And the big three for me are Exeter, Bristol and Saracens when they get all their superstars back.
That a boy. That a boy.
There's a lot of other teams that are going to be pushing for the fourth place. Wasps, Leicester. I think Leicester will be hugely improved this year again. You know, Wasps, Leicester, Sale. Yeah, we saw the improvements in them last year. Bath and won.
Quins?
Quins, mate. Quins are the champion team that no one gave a chance to. You know, so...
Are you giving them a chance this year?
Yeah, 100%. The way they played, and if they can replicate that, but they're going to be there to be shot at, aren't they? You know, they had a flash in the pan victory, I think it was 2012 when they won the Premiership, and didn't kick on from it, didn't back it up. That's the big thing for them this year, isn't it? You know, it was a bit of a surprise that they won the Premiership to people, but an unbelievable achievement. You know, I think they were 20 points down or something in the semi-final against Bristol's. And it was just a, it was a kind of movie script, wasn't it? That you could write and create a movie out of it. But can they back it up this year? Well, they're not champions because they're shite. They're champions because they played bloody well and they played an expansive game. So they've got every chance. But when you are the top team, as Exeter have found, it gets harder and harder year on year. And everyone's gunning for you. So everyone will be gunning for Quins this year because... they're the team that won it out of the blue.
Let's talk a little bit more about Saracens, because obviously they're back, and you mentioned if they have all their superstars back, they'll be one of the top three big teams. What needs to go right for them?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing for them is when you look at them on paper, they've got an unbelievable squad. But it's actually when you look into the detail of how much those boys can play, you're talking about Marrow, you're talking about Mako, Faz, you know, Elliot Daly, the guys that were on that British and Irish Lions tour. And then you factor in how much international rugby there is this year as well. There's the three autumn internationals where the Premiership games, there's Premiership games over those, some of those weekends. There's the Six Nations. It's how quickly those guys can flip between international rugby and club rugby. And all they'll need to be is in contention come sort of April time, March, April time, back end of the season. So it's they're going to win games. They're a quality outfit. Where they've got Manu Vunipola at 10, Alex Goode's come back. From Japan, he won't be playing international rugby. So Alex Lazowski's coming back from France. You know, there's quality players to keep that club in and around the top four while all the international boys are away. I think their squad depth will get tested. You know, Earl was a phenomenon last year for Bristol, as was Malins. Yeah, so you reel off some of these names and you've not even really mentioned Itoji and Faz and the rest of them. It's a world-class squad, isn't it?
Andrew, I don't know if they're a world-class squad. Look at me. Really, look James? At us. Well, I think they're an ageing squad now. Really. So when I look at it and I think about what's happened to the club, the fact that they've lost Big Willie, Little Willie Skelton, who I think is one of the best players in the world.
Swinno's there, mate.
Very true. He was unbelievable in the championship, is all I'm saying. he was. Fair play to him. But you've got Alex Goode. He's obviously been in Japan. He's not, I wouldn't say he's in his prime anymore. There's talk about Mako Vunipola leaving. If Mako leaves, then I imagine Billy leaves as a package. Whether or not that's this season or next season, we can talk about the rumours around that. Obviously, the form that Faz has been in, you know, we don't have a Richard Wigglesworth. And you think about it's been, obviously, as we know, a year that they've been in the championship. Michael Rhodes has retired. The guys that are coming back that we're talking about, Ben Earl, Nick Azikwe, I'm looking at some of the names here, Nip Tompkins, who did okay at the Dragons but hasn't really kicked on.
You said he'd be a British Lion, didn't you?
Oh, a British and Irish Lion, but yeah, it's I was wrong. And that I was wrong. But I'm looking at it now. I want Saracens to be good. I think they can make the top four. But when you actually delve deeper into their team and everything that they've been through, I think the only saving grace maybe this year is that they're not in Europe in terms of the Champions Cup. So Saracens are an interesting one because people, like you just said there, you see them as in the top three. I want to see them in the top three and obviously the top four, but it being in one of them top three or four teams in the league. But I just look at the profile of the team and I'm thinking, actually, they could be in transition here over the next 2 or 3 years. And a lot of that will depend on what Mako and Billy decide to do. Do you know what I mean? What kind of form is Faz going to be in off the back of, which without speaking for him, only going on basis of what we can see, probably the hardest time of his career in terms of his form and the pressure and the spotlight that's on him. So, you know, you're hoping that Max Malin's the way that he played at Bristol, albeit he's been injured. I don't know whether he's going to be fit for the start of the season. Obviously, Ben Earl was brilliant as well. But whether there's a change of guard in terms of the likes of Quins, I can't believe I'm saying this, and Bristol, you know, an Exeter maybe evolving on from last season. So I'm quite looking forward to watching it, Andrew, because I love my Ruggers.
Do you want to talk more about Mecco and Billy and the rumours around that and where they might be going and what your thoughts are?
Have you heard much about this, Andrew?
Well, I heard a rumour, but then I heard he's poo-pooed it, hasn't he? Post-World Cup, he's gone. He's gone to the highest bidder, hasn't he?
I could see him and Billy going to Clermont for like a ridiculous deal, like a double whammy, like a duo.
Yeah. So I don't think they'll leave pre-World Cup. You know, the way the laws are written around eligibility for England, we're 2 years away from a World Cup now. So I think they'll both stay at Saracens for the next 2 years and then they'll cash in as big a deal as they can as a collective in France somewhere where the rugby probably suits them as well. And that there's mega money still to have there. Can I see him going to Japan? Well, I mean, it's all about money then, isn't it? And coming from me, who, you know, I can put my hands in the air, I was trying to take as big a deal as possible towards the back end of your career because you don't know how many contracts you got left. And no one should begrudge them for looking outside of Saracens. Every player should be doing the best for them and making the best decision for them and their family at the time. And, you know, I see them both finishing the next 2 years at Saracens, going to a World Cup. You know, England have still got aspirations to win that and they're part of that that group at the minute, whether Eddie makes big changes or not. And I see them cashing in, unless an offer comes in beforehand that they can't resist.
Well, let's get some clarity then, because Gerdy, you chucked out a few teams of who you thought was going to be in your top four. Let's get your top four from both of you on who's going to finish in the semi-finals this year.
I don't know if Exeter are going to make top four. God, there's a headline there.
Really?
I'm going to go Sale.
Yeah.
Leicester.
Oh.
Harlequins and Saracens. Maybe not in that
really?
Order. Yeah. I know.
So no Bristol.
Oh gosh.
No Exeter. You've been decisive. You've not put Bristol or Exeter in there, if that's decisive. I mean, stick with it, Jim.
Yeah, headline, Bristol and Exeter. Jim Hamilton, rugby expert, has said that Bristol and Exeter won't make the top four. I put my name to it. Let's see how it unfolds. This is part of the discussion, isn't it? I don't know. I think Exeter might struggle because of the way that they play, especially in the start of it with the new laws around the pick and goo. I think Sale, because half the team South African, and I love Alex Anderson. Leicester, I think, are now on the upward curve. Genji, the baby rhino, is obviously captain, skips. Freddie Burns, friend of the show, is now there. Jasper Visa, they've got a South African contingent. Saracens, I think they have got the quality amongst the squad to scrape into the top four. And Harlequins, because they're we're a champion team, you know? So I don't think it's as clear cut in terms of the three best teams that you mentioned earlier. So they are my top four. But watch out. I can't believe I'm going to say this. Watch out for Worcester. Out of all the teams, if you say who's been busy in pre-season, it's the old Worcester, it's the old Warriors. Now, I can't see it. I'll tell you what, I'll eat my Timberland boots if they finish in the top six. But in terms of players that they've signed, Duane van der Merwe, obviously Rory Sutherland, two British and Irish Lions, Willie Hines, Owen Williams. I mean,
Owen Williams is a big one, I think. Owen Williams is a big one for him because if he's fit, he's class.
Exactly. So that's just naming four players. And they've been busy in the back room. Johnny Bell as well, who was at Gloucester and then went to Glasgow and then now is at Worcester. So I'm not saying that Worcester will be in the top four. I know we are digressing and we're segueing, but I am anyway. But there's my top four.
Mate, all I know is you've said if Worcester get in the top six, you'll eat your Timberland boots. And that was a fact that you stated on this podcast. So I will hold you to that, James. For me, I'm going the Bristol Barebacks. A lot of pain from losing that semi-final last year. Exeter Chiefs, not in any order this. This is just the top four in any order. Saracens, really close between Sale and Leicester. I'm going to go Leicester because it's my old club.
Oh.
So that's my top four, Jim.
There's a few big games on this weekend. Any in particular you guys are looking forward to seeing?
Well, obviously the first one.
Yeah, Bristol's against Saracens. You think about the Bristol boys, they must have had a brutal off-season and a brutal pre-season because when you've 15, 20 points up or whatever they were in that semi-final against Quins and then you lose it, there's a lot of pain there, isn't there? And then for the Sarries boys, I know they went over to Ulster and won, but they got hosed last week, didn't they, by Ulster as well, down at the HAC. There's a lot of eyes on Saracens to see how quickly they bounce back to be a team at the top end of the table. So it's an amazing game to start off with. A lot of hurt from Bristol. Saracens with a point to prove around them being back at the sort of top table. So that's a huge game to watch out for.
Leicester-Exeter, because Leicester at home, back at Welford Road. It's not called Welford Road anymore, is it? They've got a new name.
Matoli Woods, Welford Road, isn't it?
Basically, it's Welford Road. Look, mate, you know, two Tigers legends on it. It's just, well, we'll know it as Welford Road. Well, it was called that on a Monday night under the lights anyway. We used to call it Welford Road. But for me, Leicester are the big one because we followed them last season, the changes that they've had at that club. They've changed everything. So Leicester, Exeter, Gloucester obviously at Northampton. Gloucester have got a tough start. Obviously Northampton first up and then a six-day turnaround. They play Leicester at home. So Gloucester, another interesting club, struggled last year. Loads of changes. They've got two tough games up front. But I love the Prem. Like, this is the thing. Every game's a big game. There's no relegation this year. So I don't know how that's all going to unfold. And
well, that's the thing. There's no relegation this year, Jim, but someone's got to finish bottom. So we might as well say it now. I'm just gonna throw. Let's say it at the same time.
Let's go at the same time. Okay. One, two, three. Wasps.
Gloucester. Oh, Wasps. You're dreaming, man.
You think Gloucester?
Yeah, Gloucester, mate. So I think it'll be between Gloucester and Falcons and Worcester, but Worcester have made some decent signings. If they gel, they'll be all right. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, mate. I'm going Gloucester. I just think they've lost some players. They're in a transition period, haven't they? They haven't really made massive signings. Could be tough.
So you're going Gloucester. I'm going to put my hat in the ring. Oh, gosh, there's the biscuit. And say, forget it. Worcester.
Mate, you just said they might make top six and you'll eat your boot if they do. Make your mind up, son.
Well, we can take a break from the Premiership now and speak to Scotland's British and Irish Lions star, Finn Russell. How are you, mate?
I'm good, thank you.
Finn, we were going to say, how was your holiday? Because looking at your Instagram, I think you were somewhere hot. But looking at your face now, I don't think... have you been to Iceland on holiday? What's up with you?
I've been back for 2 weeks now, so the weather in Paris isn't quite the same as Mykonos. But
obviously, we're going to talk about the Lions in South Africa, where it was slightly different. But how is your kind of mental state, your love affair with rugby? There's loads of stuff. Loads of rumours. We've been seeing you in Aston Martins driving around Edinburgh. There's talk of you fluent in Japan now. There's a million reasons why you would be. How is things with Finn Russell?
Yeah, it's all good, mate. I think I'll be back playing this week. You know, you get 4 weeks off, which is good to get time off. Obviously, it was a long season. And then away with the Lions, we're in camp for 7 weeks. So good to get some time off just to kind of forget about rugby for a while. Towards the end of that, you start sort of, you know you're coming back in, so you kind of start to get ready for it like a week before you're back in. So I thought I was going to be playing last weekend. They say over here you got through 10 days kind of compulsory training before you're back able to play after holidays. So I didn't know that at the time, so I went in the fourth week and did a couple of running sessions thinking I was back playing the next week, but I wanted to find out I wasn't, so they were a waste of time.
And as a player that's obviously been on a horrendously long season, but an unbelievable season last year and culminating in that last game for the Lions. We'll come on to that in a minute. How loose can you get in those sort of 3 or 4 weeks off that you get? Because I used to go as hard as I could. Obviously, we've seen the Instagram pictures. You were away in Mykonos with Chris Harris as well, and there was a bit of a celebration there. Did you properly let your hair down? I mean, I know there's not much hair on top of your head, but did you properly let yourself go?
Yeah, I like to kind of just sort of, I suppose, go and party a little bit. And you've got to kind of forget about rugby and get away from it, get a bit of headspace from it. You know, everyone will do that in a different way. I think the first week that we were there in Mykonos, there was a few Irish boys there as well. So I had a few nights with them, and then, like you say, Chris Harris came over on a Saturday, so caught up with them a few nights. So the first week was good fun, and then the second week was more chilled, which was probably quite good. So I came back feeling pretty good, and then last weekend I was back in Scotland for a couple of days, seeing family and friends, which was good fun.
Finn, what's it like in Mykonos? I was at Ben Nevis with Andy Rowe. We were just talking about it humbly before. I'm getting stopped every 3 minutes for photos. Now, we got up there in 2 hours 20. If I didn't kept getting stopped, I would have got up there in an hour and 15. Are you getting absolutely mobbed in Mykonos or not? Or is it just me at Ben Nevis, humbly?
I think just you at Ben Nevis. There's only one night, I think, that someone was chatting to us. And that's when we were out with the Irish boys as well.
But what about when you come back to Scotland, though? So when you're driving around in the Aston Martin, let's talk about it humbly now in terms of your profile. Is it weird now? Because I know you're over in Paris, you've had a change in focus, and you can obviously hide away over there in the Moulin Rouge or wherever it is. But when you come back to Scotland, is there an element now of, you know, the Prince of Scotland, me being the King of Scotland, has arrived kind of thing?
Well, when I was back, so like I said, I got a car smashed in Martin for the weekend when I was back, which was great. But being back, you end up having to just catch, not end up, you sort of catch up with a lot of people when you're there. So there's not much time actually to be in places. I took a house out by North Berwick in Galway for the Friday and Saturday for my family and friends. So I didn't really see too many people. I wasn't in, it was only one restaurant, I think, the whole time I was there. Apart from that, it was just at the house. Like, Thursday night, I went for dinner in Glasgow, and a guy was chatting to me and just, he's like, "You're a legend, you're a legend." And then started giving me a hard time for a kick I did in one of the, in the final test. And I was having my dinner, and this guy was like, "Well underway." And I was kind of like, "Thanks, mate, cheers." And, "Oh yeah, I should have done it differently. Thanks for telling me, I'll know that next time."
Are you making me sound like a right dickhead then, to talk to myself up going to Ben Nevis, aren't you? When you're humbly saying it happened to you one night, never mind.
Now, the other 2 days, because I was out in Gullin, so we got golf and then just had dinner in the house, so it was pretty chilled. But good fun with the family and friends.
Nice, mate. It's always good to relax. Well, let's hit you with the big questions then. Go back to the Lions tour. An interesting tour, very different to what everyone's used to. You know, you guys, it must have been incredibly difficult at times to be kind of locked down the way you were in the hotel complex. And we spoke to a few of the lads while they're out there. But for you as well, being injured and then coming back for that unbelievable performance in the last test, just sum everything up for us, because, you know, there were so many highs, but also a few lows as well with the injury. And then your amazing performance in that last test must be tinged with a little bit of regret, because ended up losing the game.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. You know, I enjoyed being in camp with the boys and getting to know them all. Like, you know yourself, you know quite a few of the boys from playing against them a little bit. And I was there for a wee while in the last tour, so I knew a few of them. But it's good being there for the whole time to actually get to properly know them. Although for me, like, I think the first week is when I actually got injured, and we just thought it was a bit of tendonitis from my Achilles. But then it was only after the Lions game and the midweek game that everyone had, like, had to change the whole team for COVID. It was only 2 days after that that they scanned it and realised I'd torn my Achilles. So for me, it was kind of a bit frustrating, because the first couple of weeks I was kind of not being able to go full on and 100% and training in the games. And then the Lions second game, they called me at 10-6, being like, "Can you play?" And at this point, I hadn't trained all week and I wasn't playing, so I was staying in the hotel. And I was like, "Yeah, sure, if you need me, I can play." They're like, "Right, 10 minutes, get ready." You were on the bus in 10. I was lying in bed watching telly, thinking I can just watch it in the hotel room and chill. So that was like, it was obviously different, things like that. You know, we had to be ready to adapt for anything. If someone got a case of COVID or anything like that happened, we had to be ready to adapt. But when we moved into Cape Town, it was pretty good at the hotel. We had a golf course there. So like I was saying, I wasn't playing because I was injured. So we were able to get out on the golf course on days off, the non-23, and have a hit. So it kind of kept us busy, even like instead of having to just been stuck in the hotel and kind of mulling over everything. If you weren't in the team on days off or afternoons off, we're able to get out and have a game of golf and just kind of have a laugh as non-23, which was pretty good.
How was it watching those games, and also, you know, what was your sort of thoughts on, like, because tactics-wise, you're quite a exciting player, known for your flair, if you like, but how was it watching the Lions and the Springboks play? Because the styles were kind of, it was all very physical, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think first test we spoke a little bit about how we could sort of test their fitness and come and kind of get them second half. You know, we played the A game a week before it, I think, and second half we'd scored quite a few points against them. So first test we kind of thought, if we're in the game at half time, we should be able to get one up on them or get a few points against them second half, and they tire out, which happened in the first test. And then second test, I think we probably thought the same, and they came out really strong in the second half, which we almost weren't expecting. But yeah, I think it was both teams kind of played a similar game of almost just sort of kicking a lot and trying to pressurise the other team through the kicking battle and territory. So in the stand, like, I would have played differently, but the strategy that we put in place for those two games, which was to kind of try and press on through the aerial battle and win that. And then if we managed to win that, we should be able to win the games. Which, like I said, worked in the first game, but just not in the second game.
You clearly came on in that third test, and, you know, it seemed, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed the tactics in that third test before you came on were very similar to test one and test two. And you've come on and just, you know, changed things and played the way Finn plays.
Life is life.
La, 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 la. And that's the thing, though. Like, you're coming on and everyone is, you know, while everyone was pretty disappointed for Dan Biggar to come off injured, everyone's absolutely buzzing because you're coming on and it's, you know, a real change in mindset. And that's nothing against Dan Biggar at all. But, you know, Finn comes on, the Lambo's there, the Aston Martin's coming with him as well, and the ball is just going to get pinged around all over the place. And that's me as a fan now, having, you know, seen you play and played against you and all this stuff. But did you just rip up the script and go, we're just going to play what we see? Or was it a case of actually we were going to play that way anyway?
And just to piggyback that as well, Finn, just maybe answer both, because that's a great question by Goody. But what were you nervous as well coming on? Because there was all the talk in the media, you know, get Finn out for the third test. So there must have been a lot of pressure on you as well. Do you know what I mean? Knowing you're going to be on the bench, knowing that Biggs was injured, that there'd be a chance you could get on early. So, like, just piggybacking Goody's question as well, how did you feel stood at the side of the pitch about to go on early, knowing how the game was going, to then getting an early touch how you did and the game just opened up?
On both the questions, I mean, the third test, sort of, we kind of decided to change the game plan, and we said, like, we're going to play off 9, then off 10, and then look to go wide and actually play a more expansive game instead of the first two games, which is play off 9, first two phases, then, I don't know, try and go wide, I suppose. But after that, it's hard to go wide because it's so narrow. So for the third test, we'd actually decided that we're going to start, we're going to actually have a go and play against them and try and spin the ball wide, which, you know, suits me. And I was just kind of excited to pick, or when they named the team, I wasn't sure if I was going to be in it or not because I'd been injured for the last 3 weeks or so. And then, yeah, so I was just kind of chilled. I was like, you know, if I get on for 10 minutes, get on for 20 minutes, I'll just see how the game's going and just kind of input or play the whatever I think's best for that the scenarios in the game. If, you know, if we're ahead or if we're down or whatever we have to do. You know, I wasn't expecting to get on after 10 minutes. And even when Biggs went down, I was just at the side chilling, thinking, no, you'll get back up. It's 10 minutes. You've got a sore shin, but it's fine. And the boy, I remember Bobby was like, Finn, get ready, he's down, he might be coming off. And I was like, he'll be fine, don't worry. So I was just kind of drinking away some Red Bull, having a drink of my Red Bull, thinking he'll be fine, he'll be up. And then he got up and went back down again. I was like, oh, he's going to come off here, isn't he? So I was like, I better stand up and kind of shake a leg a little bit. I act like I'm getting ready. And then, sure enough, I was up, kind of just shaking my legs a little bit, still drinking my Red Bull, and then... and then Bobby goes, Finn, you're on. And I'm like, oh, here we go then. So I was fine. I was like dead chilled. And like for me, it was the way that we planned to play that third test was to hold the ball and actually have a go at them. So I wasn't nervous. I didn't feel under pressure. I was like, just go out there and play the game and have a real crack at them. You know, I'd seen things during the week and during the first two tests of how we can take them on and how we could score tries against them. So I just kind of went on there kind of knowing how I wanted to play the game. And I remember in that third test when I came on, the first penalty we got, I kicked about 10 metres down the pitch, and it was like a rubbish kick. And I turned to Ali Fice and just kind of made it, like, sort of started laughing to him. And he was kind of like, oh no, not one of these games sort of thing. And I was just sort of laughing at him. Like, oof. Let's see how this goes then. But no, it was, I don't know, I had just kind of had fun out there. And, you know, it was not a great experience for me, but I kind of just, went out and had a bit of fun.
Yeah. It looked like you did. I want to just ask about the Razzie Erasmus stuff. I know we're going over old ground here, but there's still a lot of talk about it in the media. And actually, I won't say who I spoke to, but there was a couple of people that were involved in the Lions camp that said they were affected, or they felt that the referees were affected by Razzie Erasmus's stuff after the first test. And you'd think that people, coaches and players, wouldn't watch or listen to the media, but they clearly do. You know, we were having a right old laugh about it here. I quite enjoyed the drama, of course. We do a podcast, so we love all that kind of stuff. But as players in the camp, did you see all this stuff unfolding? Did you see it kind of blow up in the media? Did people in the camp think that the referees were affected by everything that went on with Razzie?
Yeah, of course we saw most of that. For me, I wasn't playing, obviously, so it didn't really affect me. But I don't know. I don't know if it's quite smart by him sort of taking the focus away from all the players after them getting beaten in the first test. If he takes the focus away from all by doing stuff like that, which then maybe lets his own players kind of prepare and get ready for the game without the pressure being on them or the focus being on them that week. I'm not sure. So maybe, you know, it's maybe a tactic by him to try and help his own players out. And like you say, maybe just kind of throw a cat amongst the pigeons in the lines in our camp. So yeah, that, like I say, for me, I wasn't playing in either of the first two games, so I didn't really think much of it. But you know, for certain players, if it might have an impact on them, whether it's in the scrum or the drive or whatever it is, like I say, for me, I was kind of laughing at the tweets and stuff. I didn't really think much of it.
One of the things I want to ask you about, Marcus Smith, who came on the tour towards the back end of it, obviously, you know, not a replacement for you, but part of your injury. We've been blowing smoke up his ass on this podcast for a long time now because he's a quality operator, not only when he burst onto the scene sort of talent-wise, but now in terms of his maturity as a 10, and I think he's only still about 14 as well, looking by his beard. But I can just imagine you two at training, practicing little skills together and messing around and just enjoying life and all that stuff. How was he on the tour? Was he like a young kid coming through, or was he someone that really rose to the occasion amongst all the big names?
No, I think he definitely rose to the occasion. I know Marcus the past year and a bit now, because I sort of spoke to him a little bit when he was, because wasn't in the England squad and stuff. And I think at Harlequins it was quite tough for him before they came good, obviously. So I've spoken to him quite a lot. Then when he came on tour, and I just kind of had a laugh with him. We got on really well. I think he's still on holiday now. I think he got about 10 weeks off after it.
Finn, what do you mean you spoke to him? So as in, did he reach out to you, or how did that work?
We've got the same agent. I think just with the game plan that Harlequins had in place, it kind of wasn't suiting him, and he was sort of not, I suppose, maybe not as happy as he could be there, not playing as well as he could, just as he felt, I suppose, he was a bit kind of, his hands were tied for the attack and stuff. And with us having the same agents, my agent said, oh, do you want to have a chat with him? And I was like, yeah, no bother. So just spoke to him a little bit about how, if I've had issues with coaches or kind of game plans or anything, how I kind of dealt with it, or what I thought you should do and stuff. Nothing too much, just like, because I kind of mate, sort of chatting to him, and you know, a little bit more experienced than him, so just try to help him on his way. And then obviously we pulled him in the Heineken Cup last season, so got to go against him, and then caught up with him during the game and stuff. So but every now and then we'll just text, and then again during the tour we, you know, got really close. Neither of us were sort of playing in the tests, and we had you know, a few free nights and stuff and rounds of the golf. I think I actually took him for a bit of cash in the golf course quite easily. But
good stuff. Hey, your agent must be pretty happy at the minute, eh? He's got the brightest young talent in England coming through at 10. And as we know, 10's the money position. And then he's got Finn just naming his price in Japan, in Paris, wherever he wants. So you obviously can't comment on that. But Marcus Smith, now, would you, if you're, park the fact that you're Scottish and you're, you know, Scotland's sort of best player, number 10, all this stuff, would you have Marcus Smith starting at 10 for England come the autumn now? Because to me, his form dictates he should be.
Yeah, I think it depends how Eddie wants to play. That's the thing, you know, if he wants to actually play to attack and have a go, definitely Marcus Smith. He can also control a game, but if he's going to just kick the ball in there and play that sort of style of rugby, then I could see him going with Ford, who's more experienced and plays that sort of style of rugby quite often and has done it for years with England. Personally, for me, I'd go with Marcus. You know, he's got that X factor. He can create things from nothing. You know, his goal kicking is great, and you know, actually, all his kicking is great, really good. So, I think it's just there's a. I don't know. People might think it's just all about attack, but then again, working with him in the lines and getting to know him, he's got a really good brain for rugby. So, I think it's just everyone sees him as this bright spark coming through for attack, because he does, you know, a hitch kicking does someone on the outside, but his actual knowledge of the game is really good for a young player. So yeah, for me, I'd definitely start him. But again, it obviously depends, like I said, how Eddie wants to play and who he's going to have outside him. You know, if you had Marcus and Faz playing there, then, you know, you've got a 10 and 12 that can ball play, can kick. And if you wanted to go into that kicking game, then you've got Faz to help out there if he needs to, you know, get the shift at one pass and kick it, or Marcus can do it all, you know. I think they can get a great combination there.
Definitely. Let's just pick your brains a little bit, Finn. The new law coming around, the 50-22 kick, does that excite you? Do you think it's something that will help the attacking team, because the defensive team have got to cover the backfield a bit more maybe?
Yeah, I think especially first phase, off scrums and lineouts, you know, they're going to have to drop two players back every time from kind of 30 metres out from the opposition line, in case of that 50-22. Off turnovers, I'd imagine there'll be more space as well, because teams, if once they turn over, they'll have to try and race back to get to cover the 50-22, therefore leaving a little bit of space in front of you. You know, generally 10 and 15 will drop back, but if people start overthinking it, and then there could be other space and turnovers or counter-attack and stuff. But also, at the same time, on turnover and counter-attack, then teams are going to start looking for that 50-22, so it could be a way to quickly make yards off any turnover. You know, if, so we win a line out and they've got their whole back line flat, get the ball to 10, he can look, is it on to put the kick in the corner for the 50-22, or say, I can say their full back rushes back and their winger flies back, then there'll be space in the width. So again, just going back to the Faz and Marcus thing, if you've got a 10, 12, 15 that can all kick the ball, if you do one pass, two pass, then the full back's going to have to stay back if the opposition are in their half, because they can't come up. If you've got a 10, 12, 15 that can all kick the ball, you know, and then Chuck Slade in there as a left footer going the other side, I think having guys who are ball players but can kick it as well will be maybe, you know, a thing that we'll start seeing going forward. So it kind of forces the 10 and 15 to hold the backfield and creating space on the outside for others.
10, 12, 15 kickers of balls. Talking of numbers, it's all a bit confusing. Talking of numbers, Finn, Goody didn't want to ask the question, but I'm going to ask it. Japan, yes or no? £1 million, $1 million, million yen. I don't know what works out better.
A million yen, it's not working out.
A million or something, anyway, which sounds a lot. What were the chances? Was the opportunity there? Was it just a rumour? Have you got appetite to do that? Are you holding Racing over a barrel? What's happening?
No, I got in contact with my agent and stuff, so they're chatting about it. But for me, I want to stay at Racing. You know, it's a great club and I love being here in Paris. So I've got this season and next. So I think, you know, the only way that I would go would be if it was kind of football and money, you know. Start paying me what Messi gets paid and I'll think about it.
I thought you were more than that already, son. That's what we reckon anyway. Last question, Finn. I've got to ask you one more thing. Bit of magic you produced against Munster in the Champions Cup not so long ago. Now, we all know you put the grubber kick through. Did you mean to go for the nutmeg? Because that's all I need to know, because that was absolute class. Was the nutmeg a lucky bonus? I know you're trying to see the space behind, but I reckon you've megged him deliberately and absolutely mugged him off.
It's one of these things in my head when I got the ball, I wasn't thinking I'm going to nutmeg this guy, you know, but then as he saw me shaping for a kick, he obviously throws a leg out. And again, it wasn't like, there he's throwing a leg out, I need to put it through his legs. It's just like, that's the best space to go for it. So, you know, if I'd have gone to the left, I'd have probably stopped it with his feet. I did do it, I think the World Cup 2015 to the physio, Stephen Much, did it to him in a training session. I was coming back from an ankle injury. He didn't fall over though after it.
Don't mention the 2015 World Cup. Jim gets very angry about that, don't you, Jim?
Yeah. I was going to say, did you remember that, Jim? But
no, I can't remember that. Two-step lob, mate. Hey, two-step lob. You wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be here. We'd be in Scottish folklore history. But anyway, we're 6 years in now. People are sick of hearing about the World Cup.
All right, Finn. Thanks for coming on the show, mate. Great stuff in South Africa and best of luck in France this year, mate.
Thank you.
Cheers, Finn.
Cheers, Finn. Good on you, buddy. All good. Thanks for coming on. Legend.
No worry at all.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it, pal.
Cheers. See ya.
This episode is brought to you by NetSuite by Oracle. The less your business spends, the more margin of money you have. I think that's pretty obvious for everyone, but actually doing it, that's easier said than done because the cost of everything is going up these days. So do the smart thing. Switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth so you can easily reduce costs and headaches. NetSuite specifically helps by reducing IT costs since it lives in the cloud with no hardware required and cutting the costs of maintaining multiple systems since everything you need is on OneSuite. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See for yourself how effective NetSuite can be and try it out today. And by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/ringer. That is netsuite.com/ringer.
Oh, hold up. Smell test. Go ahead. Sniff those pits. Now your bits. Feet, toes, come on. Ugh. Could be fresher, right? It's all good. Old Spice Total Body Deodorant Spray is gentle enough to use all over your body, giving you 24/7 lasting freshness with daily use, from pits to toes and down below. So every smell test gets a... Shop for Old Spice Total Body Deodorant.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Top bloke.
Top bloke.
Yeah. Absolute hero of a bloke, isn't he? Imagine just being as laid back as he is, but as good as he is, Jim. Your skill set was pretty average for a second row anyway, but like he says, he doesn't feel pressure, doesn't get nervous. He's just loving his life, isn't he? And every reason gifted to, on €1 million a year and playing the way he does, fair play to him. Driving Lambos, driving Astons, what a bloke, what a player.
Gifted, Andrew, as you know, from a fly half perspective. And he's one of them guys, you can't help not like him. Do you know what I mean? looks like a bag of sick. And he is just, you know, as a rugby player, I say that obviously joking. He trains very hard. He's, again, without speaking for him, but knowing Finn and watching his evolution over the years, over our 6 years on the podcast, you know what I mean? We've spoken about it. We've had him on a few times. Is there's a part of him now where he realizes that it's business now. And as much as he smiles and he does whatever on the pitch, you saw that third test for the Lions. Let's pretend we won the game. That it means business. It means a lot to him. You look how he plays at Racing. You look how he's played for Scotland. The evolution in that, in terms of his leadership, the fact that he chatted to Marcus Smith. People wouldn't know these things. You know what I mean? In terms of Finn Russell being able to have the ability to do that. So love the bloke. Class to have him on. First episode of season six. And yeah, can't wait to see where he goes with it.
Mate, his agent. He's making a hell of a lot of cash out of him and Marcus Smith for the next few years, isn't he? So fair play.
Right, so every season we've had a couple of non-rugby related segments to mix things up, like the classic Riddle Me This and Japan Through Jim's Jap's Eye. So we've got another one for you this season. This one's called Guess the Goat.
We've got Andy Goode.
Not on this occasion. And we're going to run a challenge each week and we'll keep score. Whoever gets to 6 points first wins. The loser will have to roll the dice at the Christmas party and do a forfeit. This week, it's a play on 20 questions. Basically, I have a sports star in my mind and you can ask as many yes or no questions in 30 seconds. It can be current or a retired star and you've got to try and guess the person in my mind. So, Jim, you're going to go first. You're going to have as many questions as you want, yes or no questions, and you're going to have 30 seconds. I'll answer yes or no to your answers, and you've got to try and guess who I'm thinking of.
Okay, right.
Okay.
And it's only yes or no. Okay, and it's called Guess the Goat. Can I change it to Guess the Goat or not? Because that's what I've always thought it was until someone said it's the goat. That's why the emoji was the goat.
Yeah, Guess the Goat.
I had no idea. I thought it was the Goat. Guess the Goat.
Yeah, it's Guess the Goat.
Okay.
And you're ready? Your time starts now.
Is it a boy?
No.
NBA?
No.
Football?
No.
Tennis?
Yes.
The woman who won the US Open, the young girl, 18 years old, Emily something.
Fuck. No.
Yes or no? Oh, no. No. Serena Williams?
No.
Venus Williams?
No.
Tim Edmonds' mum?
No.
Andy Murray's mum?
No.
Judy Murray?
No.
Oh, gosh. The lady with short hair, Sue Barker. No. She tells.
Well, I get a guess now. I get a guess.
Okay, good. He gets the point. Guess.
Emma Raducanu.
That's correct.
Oh, yeah! That's what I said, the woman who won it. I forgot her name.
You have to know her name, mate. You have to know her
what
name.
What did I say?
You got Emily.
Emily. You said Emily. Oh. You said Emily.
I meant Emma. I meant Emma. Arguably, though, look, in defense of myself, because she could go on to be a Goat. She is not the Goat, albeit 18 years old to win the US Open. Mm. She looks like an Emma. What did I say she was?
Emily,
yeah.
Yeah, she looks like an Emily. And God, how did I not get that? It's pressure.
Mate, it is pressure.
You wouldn't realize until you get there, Andrew, that 30 seconds, it goes quick. Your mind starts playing tricks on you.
I know, I get it. Because I'm shaking my head. As soon as you've said tennis and he said yes, I'm like, it's obvious. Anyone that's lived over the last 3 days and seen any social media or any TV, or you must have been with your head in a cave somewhere, Jim, to not know Emma Raducanu. She's been everywhere. Yeah. Legend.
I know she has. And I even liked a tweet and I'm sorry for that. It's got nothing to do with me not knowing Emma. It's to do with the pressure.
Emily.
30 seconds. Emily, yes. It's to do with me not knowing Emily. Did Sue Barker play tennis?
Yes.
There we go. See, I know my tennis. Did Tim Edmonds' mum play tennis or not?
I'll be under pressure next week because it is a different, like, honestly, I'm relaxed there listening to it. I'm reacting and it's fucking easy. As soon as you said tennis, I'm like, it's got to be that woman. Whereas I guarantee if I'd have done the same thing, I'd have been panicking. The panic, it's the panic that gets you, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, who says Sue Barker, really? I mean, she a Goat.
There was a bit of rugby going on overseas and in Australia over the weekend with the Rugby Championship. Did you watch the Springboks Australian game?
My goodness. Quay Cooper.
Eight from eight.
Yeah, that's the difference, right? And there's been some stories, isn't there, over the weekend around sports. So Emma Raducanu, Jim, that's the lady tennis player that won the US Women's Open. Obviously, Ronaldo back at Man United, scoring a couple. But the big story in rugby, obviously, Quade Cooper coming back into the Australian fold. And he's been in the squad over the last couple of weeks, but gets the start at 10. Man of the match performance, 8 from 8. Slots the winner with a clutch kick. It was kind of weird for Quade Cooper because it wasn't a Quade Cooper-esque performance that we're all used to seeing with the balls around the back, the razzle-dazzle, all that stuff. It was everything that you probably wanted Quade Cooper to do at times in an Australian jersey when he's trying to do all the flash stuff back in the day. He's playing against the Springboks. He's kicked all his goals. He's controlled the game. Kicking out hand was great at times. It was kind of an un-Quade Cooper-like performance, but the perfect performance coming back into a team at 10 that needed some direction and has been on the the back end of a fair few defeats over the last sort of few months or whatever. And it was brilliant to see the clutch kick. How big are your spuds? Well, he's got massive spuds to slot that, knowing the whole world is looking at him. And especially after the Australian government wouldn't give him a residency and a passport over the last couple of weeks as well. So it's quite an interesting story, isn't it?
So he's actually a Kiwi.
Yeah, well, there you go. He's actually a Kiwi. But he's also, he must be into not weird meditation and that stuff. Basically, I'm saying he's speaking in code. I read his Instagram or his Twitter and he's obviously changed. Not that he weren't humble before, but I'm thinking rock and roll lifestyle is living the dream, which he obviously is. And then he's writing stuff like, over time, I've come to see that success is in the daily, not in the single moment. Although it feels great. A new day is already here. I don't get it.
He's a philosopher, Jim. He's basically saying it's not just about that one moment, it's about every day, James. And it was a new, when he wrote it, it was a new day. So we've woken up and they've already gone to bed and they're up again, and it's why it's a new day,
so
for him to win the
day.
Win the day, seize the day, win the day.
Own the moment. Own the moment. Own it.
Own the moment.
It's like my speech. It's like my speech in the Gloucester Changing Room. That's fucking Bristol in there.
Yeah, it's good to see.
And they're about 50. They're about 60. That's fucking Bristol. Very similar to Quade Cooper.
Yeah, it's good to see because Australia, everyone wants a competitive Australia team, and it was getting to a point where it wasn't a great outfit to look at in terms of competitiveness, was it? Especially when they're coming over to play England in November. So yeah, brilliant for the Aussies.
In other news, what do you guys make of the new World 12s concept? It was launched last week.
Shite.
Do you reckon?
I don't want to sound harsh. I mean, look, I'm going to sound harsh. At what point, and again, you've got to think the people involved in this are high up the rugby echelons, up the tree, in terms of what they've done. Steve Chu, Ian Ritchie, Hansen, as in three massive names. And without being horrible to, was it Ian Ritchie who was holding the rugby ball in terms of the promotion when no one signed off these games? I don't know if anyone needs to sign off the games if it's playing professionally. They're throwing stuff out like the top players in the world. Who's getting the top players in the world in the global calendar that we've got now? You'll need to listen to Rob Baxter's three lines that he got quizzed on about it literally a day after it got released. Now, I don't want to be horrible. I don't want to piss on someone's fire. I mean, it could be an unbelievable fire, and I hope it is an unbelievable fire. We have got bigger things to worry about in rugby before we add in a new tournament with some rich guys that have decided to invest and think it's a great idea and then start throwing out tweets like, oh, we've been approached left, right and centre for sponsorship and commercial partners. Mate, at the minute, rugby's got a lot to worry about before we start launching a World 12s tournament in August, right? Where we were just chatting about on the podcast, and Finn mentioned it about Marcus Smith being on holiday and having 10 weeks off. And, you know, I was chatting to the Saracens fans about Jamie George, you know, having to have an enforced rest, even though he's not played and he's been on tour. I think there's too many games for players anyway. Now, I'm going based on what they're saying about having the best players in the world. These best players in the world, Semi Ranarandra, he's going to be playing for Bristols. Do you know what I mean? Owen Farrell's going to be playing at Saracens. You know, Danny Cipriani's going to be playing at Bath. I know these, you know, we're talking about Premiership players. Quade Cooper is now going to be playing for Australia and he's going to get picked up by a team in Japan. Beauden Barrett, is he going to be playing? I don't know. Brodie Retallick, is he going to be playing? So it came at a very weird time for me, out of nowhere. So I hope that I'm wrong. I've pissed on the fire. What I say doesn't matter. So it's just my opinion.
Well, it does matter because it's our podcast, Jim. When you've pissed on the fire, is it really dehydrated piss, like the real smelly yellow stuff, or is it clear because you've been hydrated because you've been...
It depends. Nervous? Pre or post Ibiza, I don't know. Just tell me which one. But either way, I'm putting it out, I think.
Yeah. I think the frustrating thing about it is some of the boys that have come out and are behind it. So Gareth Davis, former Welsh chairman, Ian Ritchie, obviously chairman of the RFU, they're all the ones moaning when they're in the jobs about the global calendar. Steve Hansen, when he was head coach of the All Blacks, always talking about a global season, player welfare. And I get this thing of, you know, and it's difficult for the players. You chuck 200 grand in front of a player for a 3-week tournament, he's going to want to play. But he doesn't care about his own player welfare then. Someone needs to control the fact that these guys, they're all contracted, as Jim said, Randrandra to Bristol. Everyone's contracted to a club. So there's then an insurance issue as well. You know, who's going to insure everyone? And it's all very well saying we're going to generate 150 million or whatever the number was, pie in the sky number. Rugby's hemorrhaging money at the minute over the last few years. And, you know, the only things that really make money, I think, are the World Cups at the minute, as things stand. And every union is struggling financially now because of the pandemic, and they want to get back to the bouncing on their feet as quickly as possible with full stadiums to try and cover some of the losses. And when you talk about player welfare, is the ultimate thing, isn't it? Everyone bangs on about it. Where are you fitting this into the global calendar? Well, if you're doing it in August, that's when the Rugby Championship is. So how do you change that? And all the players are contracted to either a union or a club, or in some cases, both. And it's, you know, I don't see how it can fit in. Surely it's a pie in the sky idea where you've got some guys that have got a bit of time on their hands because they're not involved with rugby anymore. They've seen something like the 100 in cricket that they've tried to spruce up and spice up. And we've got the sevens as an alternative. 12s, what's 12s? It's, you know, five more than sevens, Jim, for a bit of maths there. But it's, you know, if you want excitement, pump a load of money into the sevens and let's build that up and let's keep the game separate, because we're just trying to blend something and change something for the sake of it and think there's a load of money going to come from it. Well, I don't believe there is.
All right, let's finish things off with the good, the bad and the ugly.
Yeah, let's talk about French rugby then. Thomas Ramos scored a hell of a try and 16 points in Toulouse's 41-10 win over Toulon in the Cheslin Colby Derby the weekend. Cast, they get a mention in the good, not only on the way to the game, and I hope people have seen this, a load of the big lads got out the bus because there was a car blocking the way. And there's about six or seven of the big lads have gone out the bus as he's trying to turn a sharp bend, picked the car up, slammed it on the curb so the bus could get round, just got back on the bus and off they went to the game. And to top that, they go to Clermont and win 34-30. So a big tip of the slipper to the Cast boys. Some big news for all Wales fans. Gareth Anscombe finally made his return from injury for the Ospreys against Northampton after being out for 2 years since that horrific knee injury at Twickenham, August 2019. So great to see him back. We've had him on the pod. He's a cracking bloke and he's been through hell and back to get back fit. So, yeah, good news for all Welsh fans with Gareth Anscombe back fit. Let's go over to the USA. USA. They beat Canada 38-16 to overturn a 13-point deficit from the first leg and winning 59-50 over the two legs to move a step closer to qualifying for the 2023 World Cup. So tip the slipper to the USA boys. They now play Uruguay next month to try and qualify. We'll go over to the Southern Hemisphere, Andy Rowe. The All Blacks, it was about their second or third team, wasn't it?
Yeah, their second team.
They made a few changes. They put their second best fly half at fly half in Bowden Barrett, and he played like the best fly half in the world. Talk to me about the offload after he's made that break.
Oh, to
Luke
Jacobson.
Absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. How good's he as well, Luke Jacobson?
Quality number eight. Nickname is Shoulders, obviously, because he loves to put the hits in.
Oh, you lads, eh?
I get it.
You lads are
just straight banter. Shoulders like boulders. Yeah. Because they're big.
Yeah, got you. Anyway, going back to New Zealand, a stunning performance by them and Bowden Barrett back in the 10 jersey. We're going to mention an Englishman, though, over in the Southern Hemisphere. Friend of the show, friend of mine. We message a little bit on Instagram and WhatsApp. But Luke Pearce, I thought his performance as referee in the Australia versus South Africa game was exemplary. Worked quickly with Matt Carley as the TMO. I thought they did really well together. So tip the slipper to Luke Pearce. But the good this week can only go to one place, one team, one player, one man. Quade Cooper, 23 points in total, kicked 8 from 8 on his comeback, including the winning penalty with the last kick of the game as Australia beat the champions Springboks, the world champions, 28-26 in Australia. There's been loads of negativity around them recently, but they've just beaten the world champions and the team that dusted the Lions. So great news for Australian rugby. They've needed it. The return of national leagues and leagues lower down the pyramid in the last couple of weeks as well is great to see. So good on Australia. The good this week goes to Quade Cooper. The bad. A few bits of bad, to be honest. Clermont losing at home. We mentioned it earlier to Cast. Doesn't happen often at the Stade Marcel Michelin.
Didn't see it.
You didn't see it, James, no, but they did lose 34-30. What else was bad? Andre Pollard, the complete opposite of Quade Cooper. His goal kicking, he had another off day with the boot. His kicking is now coming into question a little bit, isn't it, James? You saw that in the third test for the Springboks against the Lions. They brought Mornay Steyn on. And who thought he could kick a goal anymore?
Not you.
Exactly. But Andre Pollard, he left 8 points out there, which would have meant the box won the game. You flip that and Quade Cooper kicks the winner. So a bad day for Andre Pollard. Argentina have got to get a mention in the bad this week. Lost against New Zealand. Didn't score a try, didn't score a point. 39-0, wasn't it, Andy Rowe?
Yes, it was. 39-0.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't break the bagel, you get a mention in the bad. So not great from Argentina. But the bad this week, and it's our first show back. I know the news came out last week, but I'm just going to give it to the people that have come up with this idea around the World 12s. We've poo-pooed it. Jim's pissed all over it. Pre-Ibiza wee-wees and post-Ibiza wee-wees. We're not having it, are we, Jim?
It's not down to me, but I don't think the masses are having it, to be honest. And the masses being the powers that be that own the players. So, but I'm not having it either. I'm not hearing it.
No, nah, there we go. So the bad this week goes to the World 12s and their idea to try and ram another tournament into an already compact global season and not considering them player welfare. The ugly, only one bit of ugly really from the game this week, and it's really ugly. Former footballer Fabrice Muamba, remember him, Jim?
Yes.
Had a heart attack, I think, on the pitch for Bolton. Said his 12-year-old son was subjected to monkey chants after scoring a try against Manchester Grammar School in a school's rugby game this
weekend.
So, yeah, very disgusting scenes. And if it's true and it did happen, you hope that the appropriate action is taken by Manchester Grammar School and very harsh action needs to be taken.
Thanks, Goody. And you guys have got a couple of shout-outs to finish off with, don't you?
Yeah, I've got a big shout-out to John Mowbray, a.k.a. Croc, because of his wobbly teeth. I didn't know that crocs have wobbly teeth. Did you?
I think it's crockery.
Oh, crockery? I don't know. Bag of chips. Chris Ashton, that's what we used to call him anyway. And everyone else who's been raising money for the RFU Injured Players Foundation recently. There was an IPF Vets tournament at Twickenham on Saturday involving Hammersmith and Fulham RFC, Ealing Trailblazers, Finders RFC, Chiswick, Wimbledon, Rams and Schnillions. Is it Schnillions? I don't know why I laughed.
Silhillions, James.
Oh, Silhillions. Schnillions. And they raised over £100,000, which is amazing. And if anyone wants to donate, you can still check the link on the RFU Injured Players Foundation website, and you can do it that way. Schnillions.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff from everyone involved in that. Big shout out to Gordano Rugby Club. I was speaking at their 50th anniversary dinner at the weekend. Best player, Kane Sowry. Apparently he's really good. And then Ollie Slim is a bit of a legend, but what a rugby club. Gordano from Bristol, 50-year anniversary. They worked out it wasn't their 50-year anniversary. They were formed 130 years ago. Only in Bristol. Do you not know how old you are, kids? So big shout to the Gordano boys.
Thanks, Goody. Thanks, Jim. And thanks to our new producer, Tristan. We've got a new producer. Do you guys even know that, guys?
Yes, of course we did. And if it comes out, the podcast is normal, then I'll thank him next week. But obviously, this is his cup final, getting the first episode of season 6 out there. And then we will welcome him with open arms if he's press record. So welcome, Tristan. This is your life.
Good luck.
And thank you very much for listening as well. Don't forget to check us out on YouTube and make sure you've subscribed on Spotify.
Rugby Spod.
Spotted pod.